And on today's show. So my grandma sat down and retold me a story that had come from my grandpa. She said it was 1917. It was World War I. My grandpa, also called HR, his platoon was entering a French field that had these beautiful poppies all around it. They were not more than 20 steps into the field when a landmine exploded. It took out a soldier with a tremendous blast that could remove appendages of a young man's body. So everyone in the platoon froze. After the terror of seeing your own friends be hurt or killed and their body parts passing by you, or worse than that, their body parts hitting you, the men gathered their nerve and very slowly moved backwards. My grandfather never stepped on a landmine. He was lucky. Well, sort of. A fellow soldier near my grandfather, HR, triggered a landmine. As this young soldier's body fragmented, a part of his body had the force and velocity to hit my grandpa just above his ankle. My grandpa was carried off that colorful poppy field that day alive, but without his right ankle and foot. He received the Purple Heart. Hi everybody, I'm Paul Hart, and welcome to Life's Learning Curve. We're a podcast about how we became the person that we are today through storytelling. We're in season 2, and this is episode 26. You know, we all have things in our life that are irreplaceable. Things like, a favorite golf club, a comfy chair that we love to sit in our house. Or I remember my grandma's like cheesy casserole dish at Thanksgiving. Irreplaceable stuff. But what about people? They are even more irreplaceable, of course. This was never more obvious for me than when I lost my best friend and my best pal, my grandpa. By the time I was born, his lifelong learning was deep and full of experiences, bad ones, good ones, a deep, rich life. But somehow, as I was told, a new version, a happier, less serious version of my grandfather appeared when he was with me. So what happened? Let's find out.
This is Life's Learning Curve. I'm Paul Hart. Today's episode, Irreplaceable. Stand by.
You know, a couple podcasts ago, I talked about my grandfather, who I called Grandpa, and the great relationship he created with me. My grandpa's real name was Harold Russell Wilkinson, or HR, as his family called him, or Wilk, as his friends in the community called him. My grandpa and my grandma were church-strong and community-minded people. Grandpa was a really properly groomed man of that era, of that time, and the time frame I'm talking about when I knew him was in the late 1960s, early 70s.
How do you do?
When I was just old enough to walk, Grandpa, when he would come over to our house, would nonsensically call out made-up phrases. He'd yell,
"Pit-pot-po! Pit-pot-po!"
And for some reason, that was the cue, and I would run searching the house for my grandpa. I would run to him. I would jump in his arms. I remember his aftershave. It was Menon's Skin Bracer in the green bottle, along with Beeman's gum. My grandpa always was chewing gum and an aromatic cigar all going at the same time. And they all synthesized together to create Grandpa's composite aroma. So I guess it was not by accident that as an adult I used Menon's Skin Bracer in the green bottle. I chewed Beeman's gum wherever I could find it. It was hard to find by that time. And even though I was a non-smoker, I would smoke an aromatic cigar once a year. It was kind of like bringing the man back, or at least bringing the feelings back and a lot of good memories of when I was with him at a much younger age. Our sense of smell is pervasive and most definitely embedded in our psyche. Although I only had my grandpa until age 12 when we lost him, I knew that there was something extra special about him, and I could tell it. I just could tell. My mom told me that as an infant, I bonded with my grandpa and I ran to him whenever he came over to our house or I went to visit him. Yet, he was not an extrovert. He wasn't loud or gregarious. On the contrary, for me, he was just a grandson's best buddy. Wherever he went, he took me with him.
Come on, Polly.
We went to the bank, we went to the barber shop, the courthouse to pay bills, and we would ride in his Cadillac. Or he had another car, which I just called the good car. I don't know what it was. It had round taillights. I remember that my grandpa's older 1955 Cadillac was interesting because when you filled it up at the gas station, you lifted up the back driver's side taillight, and under the taillight globe was a light bulb for the taillight itself, and there was a gas cap. That's how you put gas in the car. It was very cool, very innovative for back then. The good car was a vehicle that my grandpa brought back from the high school where he taught mechanical drafting, and driver's education. Now, we only took the good car to fill it up with gas. We never drove it around town or did errands with it. It was kind of just what he did. He brought it home to fill it up, wash it. When we were at the gas station about 3 blocks from his house, he would look down and say to me,
"Let's see if old Charlie's working, Polly."
Grandpa seemed to know everyone in town. I like that.
How you doing?
Whether they were young or old or in between, they knew him,
Charlie,
and he knew them. Small towns. The community always greeted him with friendship and an exaggerated story or two.
"Hey, Charlie, that dog of yours still so sad all the time."
"Oh, yeah, Wilk.
She's a melancholy, right?"
"Oh, that's a bad one." "Hey, Wilk, what does that daylight saving time mean in Seattle, Washington?"
"I don't know."
"An extra hour of rain?"
"I suppose."
As these conversations took place, I watched. I was a quiet, shy youngster, I was told. True, I would agree with that. My grandpa was confident, somewhat quiet himself. He was honest as the day is long, smart, resourceful. When the going got tough, it seemed to always be my grandpa who worked exceedingly hard to solve problems. As a matter of fact, grandpa had this framed plaque down in his basement workbench area that read,
"You must do the job no matter what, who or where the situation. Whether you want to do the job or not is not important. The work must get done. It must be done."
Don't think I didn't memorize that. I looked at it every time I was in the basement, and I thought to myself, if Grandpa hung this on his workbench, it had to be meaningful, because he was not a guy who had plaques everywhere. So my grandpa was a man of very few words, and he chose them very carefully. But with me, Grandpa was very verbal. He drew silly cartoons, and even though we saw each other weekly, he mailed me letters from his house and made me feel important. Always. Why? Why me? I was told by my mother once that the grandpa I knew was not the same man she grew up with, that her upbringing was quite serious with him, very strict, very structured, very layered with God and country. Now, the man I knew still layered God and country, yes.
"Every time."
This was a guy who giggled. I should probably say he chuckled. He wasn't a giggler, but even he did that quietly. With me. He showed me how to build things out of wood, spent time with me, invested time. He showed me how to use his tools one by one and what each one did. And he told me often about how it was important to treat people with respect. Now, a very common phrase that he used to say to me was,
"See that gentleman, Polly?
He's a good man. A good man. It's important to grow up to be a good man in life.
Now, as a matter of fact, Grandpa used to call me his good man. You know, 3-4-year-old me would be up in his lap and he'd say,
"You're my good man, my best man, and my dandy man."
Imprinting. People that know me today, in current day, can tell you that I use my grandpa's phrase often when it rings true. I can tell my own son, "Riley, see that guy over there? He's a good man. You can trust him." That's important to know. I had said in the previous podcast where I spoke about my grandfather that people of all ages all over town greeted him with honor and respect as we walked down the street together.
"Good morning, sir."
Now, how was this possible, I wondered, at that young age?
"Hello, Wilk."
Why did so many people know him and speak with respect to my grandpa? Could he be the town's mayor or something?
"Good day, sir."
As I got older, I needed to find out. Born in 1897, my grandpa was one of 12 brothers and sisters. He was the oldest and worked on the family farm in the rural west of Chicago, and often found himself in charge of his siblings. Around age 13, my grandpa, H.R., helped run the huge, massive, steam-powered tractor that helped do everything on the farm, from sawing wood to threshing grain and doing so many other things. He was fascinated by the power generated by steam. It looked to be the technology of the future at that time. Practically every year after I was born, my grandma and my grandpa took me to the Threshman's Reunion, as they called it, in Sycamore, Illinois. And I recall we would see these massive, huge steam-powered tractors still running like they did 60, 70 years prior. Also, my grandpa ran into old friends from his childhood, now in their 60s and 70s. And they would all stand together in a group and reminisce and tell stories. Grandpa was so happy to touch base with his past, going back 60 or so years prior.
"Hey, there's old Hank."
"Hello, Hank."
"Wilk, you old son of a gun, how are you?"
"Well, I'm better than Briggy Studebaker."
"Yeah?
Remember that? He's still probably running down Lincoln Highway."
Yeah.
"He ran a quarter mile."
Once again, I recall the smells of these huge steam-powered tractors as they were once again fired up and functioning, but this time for nostalgia. On a side note, I still occasionally go to the Threshman's Reunion in Sycamore, Illinois. I went last year, as a matter of fact. But now, with all the original farmers gone, passed on, it's called the Sycamore Steam Show and Threshing Bee. It's filled with food, smells, and sounds of America's past, and you gotta love it. Back when my sister turned 16 many years ago, my grandma sat her down and told my sister the story about how she met my grandfather back around, you know, the 1915s, 1914, something like that. After a proper courting process, the right amount of time, the families got to know each other, and my grandma and my grandpa were married. My grandma always called him H.R. for Harold Russell. My grandma helped me understand the man better by sharing his stories with me when I was in my late teens.
"Oh, Paul, it does my heart good. I'd love to tell you stories about your grandpa."
Now, these were stories that he had shared with her. They probably were, you know, their private stories. He didn't go around telling stories about his life to anybody, but they were married and she knew about this. Now, my grandma had me asking. Somebody asking about her husband who had passed. These were stories that only she knew. She told me that when World War I broke, that my grandpa H.R. enlisted so he could fight for the United States of America and went to war in 1917. And there was an amazing amount of patriotism, and he wanted to be a part of that effort to fight for freedom all over the world, for his country. For a good deal of the war, my grandpa H.R. was situated in France. There was an unspoken premise out there that if you go to war and witness casualties and human suffering, you seldom ever speak of it to anyone ever again. It's just too terrible. It's hard. It's traumatic. Just no one spoke of it. Today, PTSD. Very simply, while in France, he had a landmine explode near him and another soldier's body part took off my grandpa's ankle and foot. After an 8-month stay in multiple French hospitals, which were not state-of-the-art in 1918, my grandpa experienced gangrene in his wounded leg. Now, gangrene is the death and decay of body tissue caused by insufficient blood supply to that area that's been wounded. And so the area actually begins to die on the living body. So it requires urgent care. And there were no antibiotics back then, hadn't been created. And the pain medications were only going to the French soldiers in the hospital. And here he was, an American, among wounded French soldiers. So limited morphine was given as the dead tissue was removed. The surgeons there used saws to remove parts of my grandpa's leg 3 more times. He had to have more amputations. His injured leg was becoming shorter and shorter. Now, just under his knee, before they could do another gangrene surgery and remove probably the knee, my grandpa used crutches to escape that hospital. And he took a freighter ship back to Maryland in the United States. By that time, it was late 1918, and the war had ended. My grandpa was treated in a USA Veterans Hospital, honorably discharged from the Army, and returned home to the mid-Midwest, and had to relearn to live life with an artificial leg. During World War I, there was a short poem written by a Canadian physician, Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, about a nearby area of France called In Flanders Fields. I'm going to read that at the episode's end. My grandparents never spoke of the war, but just to that poem, even as a youngster, I could tell there had been sadness and stress there, and that poem said what needed to be said for that generation of young soldiers fighting a world war. When my parents were first married, my father, who was always quite active and played a lot of sports, was asked by my grandfather if he could help him dismantle a barn just west of Geneva, Illinois. It was about 1949, and the war, World War I, was about 30 years behind my grandpa. As my dad retold it,
"Well, your grandpa, H.R. and I got there, and we saw a 3-story barn and no other workers. I thought there'd be a bunch of men. H.R. walked around the barn structure several times, and he told me that there was an easy way to take down this barn.
I got an idea.
I asked H.R. what I should do, and he reached over and he grabbed a board. It was a 4x8. And he told me to go to the subfloor where the manure fell. Go down there and use that 4x8 board to knock out all the floorboards above my head. I did that, and each time I got a face full of old dried manure. Every time I knocked a board out, more manure on my face. I asked HR what he would be doing, and he told me he was going to climb to the peak of the barn's roof and starts sawing with his handsaw.
Can you give me my saw?
My grandpa said,
I plan on sawing this barn in half, Bob.
Well, I came up to check in HR a few times. You know, he had that artificial limb, and I didn't know how he'd be doing sawing up on the roof. But when I checked on him, I'll be doggone if he wasn't up there with a handsaw, bent over, sawing that barn in half. The second time I came up there to check on him, my foot slipped on the ladder, and my leg went through a glass window. It bled like a son of a gun, Paul. HR came down and looked at me, and he said, you'll be fine. Now, get back to work.
Okay, HR.
Well, I was fine. I was bleeding, but I was fine. HR had that work ethic, so no job was too big and goals must be completed. That was your grandpa. HR also told me that he planned to be done before noon. As we were working, I remember once I heard HR lose his balance and I heard a loud noise. And I ran out and saw him falling down the slope shingles of the barn. I ran out to break his fall or help him. Well, what I saw was HR carefully pull a claw hammer out of his tool belt, and he powerfully used the claw of that hammer to punch a hole in the roof, which stopped his fall. He didn't say a word, and he didn't look down at me. I guess he didn't need to, but just climbed back up to where he had been and began to saw again. Around noon, I heard HR call my name.
Bob?
I ran out from the subfloor and saw that he had handsawed the entire barn down the roof and both sides. He sawed it in half. My once bloodied leg had clotted by this point, and I had mostly stopped bleeding. I told HR, well, HR, I only have one more row of boards to remove. Just one more, and I'll be done. But HR told me, that's good enough, Bob. Just leave it like you have it.
Okay.
Don't go back in. He and I stood there, we about 50 yards back, and within 3 minutes, we watched that barn collapse in on itself.
There she goes, Bob.
How about that? I was amazed that your grandpa, with his artificial leg, was physically able and so confident in his knowledge of support structures to know what he knew about that structure. I always respected your grandpa. He was one tough cookie.
As I said before, by the time I was born, my grandpa had retired from teaching, and he had this new vista in front of him, another new open book of his life. And I guess that's when I came along, right at that time. I was part of his new, ever-changing life. We would watch the Bozo TV show together on TV. We would rewatch the news every day at noon and at 5 o'clock to check the stock market results. He would walk me over to the park across the street from his house. It was called Hazeltine Park in St. Charles, Illinois. And he'd push me on the swings or he'd watch me play. I recall in my grandpa's house a massive workbench building area in his basement. He was a craftsman as well, and this was where he and I built lots of things together. Mostly he showed me what to do. I remember we built a 3-shelf unit for me, and it was made out of cedar scavenged from an old tree cut down from his family farm 30 years prior. Now I still have that shelf today. Grandpa also helped me build a perfect looking Pinewood Derby racer for a competition. Again, I still have that today. If Grandpa made it, it stood the test of time. I recall that when Grandpa worked very hard and concentrated, he chewed that Beeman's gum extra hard. And when he really concentrated, this is an interesting thing, when he really thought hard, he would perspire heavily from his forehead when he deeply concentrated and worked on something with his hands. Something my mom inherited from him. And as I got older, so did I. As a child, I loved staying overnight at my grandparents' house in St. Charles, Illinois. My grandma made these fun pancakes in the shape of animals, and they, you know, pancakes run, and so she'd try and make a squirrel or something, and she'd wind up laughing and laughing and laughing at how silly they looked. She was fun. Grandpa enjoyed a short glass of Pepsi every day. Me too. We shared a common birthday date, and I used to count how many cans of Campbell's tomato soup he had in his storage cabinet. For some reason, that was really important to me, and I used to like to go down and check that under the cabinet. Usually, he had 25. Well, that's what going through a major depression does to you in life. I thought he was rich because he had 25 cans of soup. I liked the way that he could make a Hershey bar appear by hiding it up his sleeve and showing me his hand and saying, "See my hand?" And he put his hand behind his back. And at that time, the Hershey bar would slide into his hand. He'd pull the hand out and show it to me.
"Grandpa, how'd you?"
I thought it was magic. I was a kid. I believed it. It was quality time with one another. My grandpa was going through a phase in his life where he finally had time. He had gone through a terrible war, supported his original nuclear family, created his own family with three children, my mom being one of them, and now he was retired from working as a teacher. It was his time. He invested that time with me. What did I know at that time? All I knew was I just loved him. I love spending time with him. So, why? Why me?
It's important to be a good man, always.
My grandpa made me his priority, and he made me feel important, always. And he included me with things he did. I was so proud to walk next to this man with such high self-esteem and so honest. It is good to be honest with people, because they always know that you're a straight shooter and they know where you stand. My grandpa was a man who had figured out what I call the secret to life.
How you doing, sir?
The more you give to someone, the more you receive back when you're genuine about giving your gift.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wolfson.
There's so much more, but I'll put those in to future podcasts as inserts of stories. Finally, respect. Remember earlier I had talked about when I walked down the street with my grandfather at that young age for me.
How you doing, sir?
People all over town greeted my grandpa with honor, respect.
How you doing?
As I held this guy's hand. Why? My grandfather had survived life's heavy load more than once. A couple of world wars, a major financial depression. He had helped others. He had bailed out others. He had taught clubs for kids at the high school, coached. He was a scout leader, took care of others. He raised a family. And he helped my grandmother after she had a massive heart attack just prior to the year I was born. Humble, loyal, respected, irreplaceable. These days, I pull out a cigar and I'll smoke that cigar, and I know that I share my grandfather with God. Out of all the role models in my life, and I've had some great ones, he still remains the most respected and truly loved man I've ever come across in my life. Irreplaceable. As promised from earlier, the poem In Flanders Fields by Canadian physician Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae. In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky, the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead short days ago. We lived, felt dawn and saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie
in Flanders Fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you, from falling hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high, if ye break faith with us who die. We shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Fields.
For Life's Learning Curve, I'm Paul Hart.
Our show is put together by producer Paul Hart with assistance by Ned McAnally and ST Dog. We're mixed by Chad Loebner, technical director Marie Barnes. Music and sound by Riley Hart. On this show, special thanks to Harold Russell Wilkinson and all of our veterans past and present. Find our website, lifeslearningcurve.org. Some names and some voices were changed for entertainment purposes on today's show. Help us grow and continue by liking us on Facebook and listen to us everywhere you're listening right now, and practically everywhere podcasts are found. I'm Paul Hart, and we'll be back soon with more from Life's Learning Curve.
We're clear.